pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to welcome everyone to our meeting this morning. It's after 9:30, time for public hearing. Rural zone change, RZC 07-02, A1 to B1, Hanover Township. Joel?
Thank you, gentlemen. Today we're looking at a zone change that many of you may know the property. It's been there for a number of years. It's the Shady Nook property on US 27 and Woodbine Road. The property, as you can see in the first paper of your packet, you can see the image of that. It is currently there as far as the building. There are some surrounding residential properties at this site. The current zoning, it's kind of interesting since it's been there for a number of years. It's zoned A1 agricultural district. It's kind of I would somewhat consider it somewhat of a glitch in the system from when we originally adopted zoning way back in the 50s. It's been around since around that time. So today what the applicant is looking to do is change that A1 zoning to B1 so that they can reopen the Shady Nook restaurant so that can be similar to what they had there before. That is what is perceived at that site by the applicant. Once again, as you can see, it is surrounded by A1, which most of the A1 in that area is actually residential, not used for agricultural purposes in that general direct vicinity. The adopted land use plan calls for this area to be low density residential, which of course a business use would not be in that. But once again, since this is a existing structure that has existed there for a number of years as a business, not in the past 10 years or so, but they would like to reopen it as a similar use. Staff is looking at this to be approved. The surrounding area, the closest residential structure is across US 27. It's about 117 feet away. Then the next closest is the next door neighbor on Woodbine Road, which is 165 feet away. And then to the rear, there is the old schoolhouse, which is 170 feet away, as you can see in that diagram in the packet. I do have some photographs of the property in your packet. And there are from the front, the side, and the rear, and also the signage that is currently out there at this site. This is also, if you look on the top left photograph, that is the western property line along the parking lot. There is about 2 or 3 foot high rock wall, and then there is a fence along the property line to the western property line. That there is a existing sanitary facility out there, so they do their own treatment on site, so there's not a septic system. The applicant is aware of any EPA regulations and will have to follow and abide by those. There's some more pictures of the site. There's the schoolhouse through the trees there. Just to give a background as far as what we've had to do as far as going through the zone change process. The process, as you are probably aware, but I'll just go through it anyhow, is it starts out with the applicant applying to the planning division, and then it must go to the planning commission. Planning commission makes a recommendation, which is not binding. It then goes to the Rural Zoning Commission, and the Rural Zoning Commission makes a decision that is binding, except to say unless the county commissioners would reverse by a unanimous decision. So the Rural Zoning Commission, at their meeting, did recommend approval to the county commissioners. So the county commissioners, if they would want to recommend denial for this, would have to vote unanimously to do so. So that's just a little bit of the background on Ohio zone changes. If there are any questions at this moment in time, that'd be fine. I know that the applicant is here, and there are residents from the area. I will actually, before I go to that, there are some things that I have as far as the actual uses that are permitted and a B1. And I know that at least one of them has been somewhat of controversy. The first one is for any type of retail, a grocery or food store can be put in a B1 district. Restaurants that do not include drive-throughs can be put in a district. The third one is the controversial one. Bars can be included in a B1 district. Financial institutions, but you cannot have any drive-throughs, are allowed in a B1 district. Nursery schools and child care facilities are also allowed. And then also any type of local convenience store or service establishment such as that are allowed in a B1 district. And then, of course, anything that is permitted in an agricultural district is allowed in a B1 district also. So that's just a little bit of the background of what, if indeed something were to change in the mindset of the property owner, or if this property were to be transferred at some other point in time, what they could do by right in a B1 district.
Have there been any conditions placed on this?
Because it's in a straight zone, Mr. Dixon, we cannot place any conditions on that. If it were a planned unit development, we could. The way that it is already in existence, it's really kind of, it would really be a lot of variances to our PUD, which is why it was not brought together as a PUD at this moment in time. So no, there is not.
When you mean already in existence?
I mean, as far as the actual structure and everything, that's what I mean by that.
How long has it been since that structure's been open?
I mean, it's been probably about 10 years or so. I'm sure the applicant could. The applicant actually is the current and previous owner and operator of the business, so I'm sure she could give you a little insight as to the history of the site.
So let me ask you another, go back to that question.
Sure.
On restrictions.
Yes.
There's no mechanism that you have to put on that to restrict that from certain uses?
Well, I mean, any types of, as far as what I just said, that's what they're allowed to, they would be allowed to do. But as far as if there is a restriction on the restaurant, type of restaurant, I mean, we couldn't say one versus another type of restaurant, but it couldn't have any drive-through restaurants.
Hours of operation,
that's something that could be put in place, but that would be more something on the township type level. As far as what we have with that, with the way the Ohio Revised Code is written for hours of operation, it's only you can do it only if it's directly adjacent to residential properties. So that would be something that could be done at this site since it is directly adjacent to residential properties. We do not have anything right now in our zoning code for that. It would have to be.
Let me ask you this. Hampton doesn't have their own zoning, right?
That's correct. They do not.
How are they able to place conditions on?
Well, the reason why I'm saying that is because right now in our own zoning code, we do not have that type of restriction.
They're not a home rule township.
So what I'm saying is that they would have to go through some type of process that I am not necessarily aware of, but we cannot do it as part of the zoning since we do not have that in our zoning code right now. So, and maybe the commissioners could do something, but we, as far as the zoning is concerned, do not have anything available.
So tell me why we wouldn't do this as a PUD.
The reason why that it came in as a straight zone was that it would not meet a lot of the requirements of a PUD.
Like what?
Well, it has to be 5 acres in size is the minimum size, or it has to get some type of variance for that. Okay. A lot of the setbacks and buffering.
You could approve it as it sits.
What's that?
You could approve it as a BUD as it structured lays on the property right now, right?
That would be something that would have to be up to. I guess the reason why it did not come in as such is because there were so many conditions that would have to have been put on that. That's the reason why it was not.
There's a big stretch between a restaurant and a bar.
Sure.
Okay. So, I mean, I haven't heard any. I'm just telling you my first pass at this, okay? And we're going to go into public hearing to hear this. But I just wanted to know from you what mechanisms allowed that to happen and were there conditions placed on it. And you're telling me it's just a straight B2 zoning, so.
Correct.
I mean, it could be a gas station.
No, it could not be a gas station. It could be those things that I had just said with the retail service, grocery store, but there's nothing for gas station. It could be a pickup station, could be professional office, okay. Restaurant, bar.
It could be a bar.
It could be a bar. That's number three in the permitted uses in a B1 district.
Do we have a copy of that permitted use?
Yeah, I actually do have some copies for you.
Has there been any comments from the trustees?
The trustees voted in favor of this at one of their meetings.
Okay.
What was the discussion at the meeting? Was there opposition?
I unfortunately was not at the meeting. I know one of our zoning commission members was at the meeting, and he did not say that there was any opposition. But I cannot say that for sure. I don't know. I was not at that meeting, so I cannot say for sure.
Maybe somebody can tell.
It sounds like some people have been at the meeting. So, thank you.
Mr. President, go ahead.
Does anyone else wish to speak in favor of this zone change?
We want to hear from the applicant.
Can we hear from the applicant, please?
Hello.
Hi there.
My name is Cheryl Armand, and we bought the Shady Nook in 1984 in July. And ran it up until 1999. And unfortunately, the gal that I had as a partner for the second part of that from 93 on died. And so I have a job in Columbus, so I didn't feel comfortable in running it because I was getting some feedback from some friends who said that the food quality wasn't as I would expect it to be. And so I closed it. Originally, I think the property was almost like a convenience store. I think it was the first one. It must have come in the 30s. Stan Todd put the organ in the restaurant in 1956, and then he ran it till he died. I'm going to say probably 1980, and then there were two gentlemen who ran the restaurant from 80 till 81 till 84, and then we bought it from them. I don't know what to tell you. They asked me about menu, and I can't answer the menu situation because I don't know exactly what the health department's going to let me do. Health codes have changed significantly in Ohio, and so I don't know what they'll grandfather in my kitchen. Originally, when we bought the property, our intention was to gut the kitchen and put a new kitchen in because the kitchen's old, really old. Unfortunately, the EPA said put a septic system in, so the money that would have gone for the kitchen went almost $50,000 into putting the septic system in. So when the septic system went in, we didn't have enough money to do a lot of remodeling in the kitchen. I haven't talked to the health department, but I'm fairly familiar with the health code, so I don't know how much those guys will approve in this old kitchen and how much work I'll have to do to be able to adjust the kitchen to a menu that was similar to the menu that we served before, which was probably, I was trying to make it like a restaurant that I go to. The menu before was probably pretty much like the Pine Club in Dayton, similar. That was the kind of menu that we served. That was pretty much the kind of clientele we had. I'm thinking in terms of doing something I was at Cameron, I don't know if you're familiar with Cameron Mitchell restaurants in Columbus, but I was there over the last week. One of the other gals in our office retired. And I'm thinking, it depends on what they allow me to do, to try to do the upscale sandwiches and things like that that they do there. And try to start out with that. A lot of the hang up is how much, you know, as what they're going to approve and what they're not. The hood is probably the most significant thing because we're talking probably $20,000 or $30,000 for me to put a new hood in there. So I need to think about my resources and how much money I have to be able to upgrade it like tomorrow versus upgrading it as I go along to try to get it back in. I have done a search on some equipment that I know I can work with that'll meet the health code. So I know I can do sandwiches, and I know I can do one of my schools had a pizza oven, and so I got that from them, so I know I can do that. Those kinds of things I know I can serve for sure. I just don't know what other kind of menu items I have. And then I still have to get the septic system approved from the EPA. Because it's been long enough since they actually operated. Indiana Ohio Water Treatment ran the plant for me and came out and did you know, all of the things that needed to be done with it. I did have some broken pipes, which we've gotten fixed, and I had a blower motor that we had to get that I am in the process of getting replaced. So I'm trying to work on those kinds of things, because somebody said, you know, how soon can you open it? And I said, I don't know. I just, you know, I just take baby steps as I'm going along and then see how I can do it. I finally have enough years in with the state of Ohio that I can retire. I haven't gone to the retirement board yet, but hopefully they're going to say, okay, Cheryl, you can go. And that's pretty much what I'm going to do with it.
Are you planning on residing in Butler County?
Oh, I think I'm going to have to reside pretty close to here. My kids are, we lived in Hamilton for a long, long time and sold the house in Hamilton. My one and only child and grandchildren live in Springboro, so I'm going to be fairly close. I'm certainly not going to stay in Columbus, Ohio.
Is there a liquor license with this?
There has always been a liquor license with that property. We bought it. We had a liquor license at the time that we bought the facility. We had liquor there the whole time we were there, the whole time the restaurant was open. I don't know that we, other than New Year's Eve and some things like that, ran it real, real late at night. I don't think I caused a problem with any of my neighbors. If I did, they didn't say so. How's that? Yeah, it's always had one.
What if the problem we have with this is if we rezone this and you get into this and find out that it's not salvageable, what are you going to do? If the health department says can't open up and the kitchen's now $400,000, what are you going to do with the property?
I'm going to make it work. The kitchen's not that far out of line, guys. Well, okay, let me give you a little background. I work for the Department of Education, but I work in child nutrition. Mm-hmm. And so I have 241 school systems in Ohio that I'm responsible for, all on the other end of the world, all from Cleveland over. And so I've been with the guys building all the new school systems that are going in, trying to get the plan set up, deciding on what equipment we're going to put in the buildings and those kinds of things. That's why I'm familiar that I'm not going to meet all the code regulations. It might take me a while to get enough money to put some of the things in. As I said, I don't know what he's going to approve and what he's not. I have some set aside to do the kitchen, assuming that the septic system's not going to...
But you don't have any... You don't have any professional estimates or...
No, I don't.
Inspections or...
No, the health department hasn't... I haven't even asked them to go in because I needed to do step one. I need to get it, the zoning changed. I need to then... Step two is get the septic system up and running because you can't get a food service license until I get the septic system done. And then... work on the same time I'm working on the septic system, go in there and do that. And I did start. I didn't realize I wasn't zoned and commercial because that's what my tax bill says. So all this time I had no idea that I was, you know, that I had a restriction, or I probably could have struggled and tried to run it, especially when my son worked at the Hamiltonian, so he could have helped me in the kitchen in the Hamiltonian, could have helped me to operate it during those time period after Thelma died, but I didn't realize I had a problem until I went to paint the outside of the building because it was looking pretty bad. So I needed to get the building adjusted. So I went ahead and had the painters come out there and paint, and that's when Mr. Fox stopped and said, you can't do this. So now I'm at step one, I guess.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there any opposition to this zone change? Anyone wants to speak in opposition? One at a time, if you would, please. If you would, give your name and address for the record.
Hello, my name is Jane Schriever. I live at 895 Millville Oxford Road. So my house is the schoolhouse. I border the Shady Nook on the north and to the west. I'll have to say, this is the second time this gentleman has presented his pictures, which I sort of resent. He's taken pictures of the back of the Shady Nook that make it look like it's nothing but a brushy pile over to my house, and that is a misrepresentation of what it is. I've spent thousands of dollars to plant shrubs and trees there to make it a kind of a show place. It doesn't look like a brushy field. That's the Shady Nook field.
We'll get him some photography lessons.
Oh, it looks great for the Shady Nook. Yeah, I've lived there for 30 years. You know, I worked there when Ralph and Dennis owned the business before Cheryl and her husband bought it. And I worked for them there also. More than once, at least twice I know of since I've lived there, we have actually voted in our community not to allow Sunday sales there. You know, there were restrictions on that building as a restaurant that served dinner, not sandwiches. And the liquor license went with that. And again, they were allowed to serve only beer on Sunday because the residents did not want that to be a bar for that long. You know, it's not a new thing with new people that live there. All of us have been there a long time. You know, and I know Cheryl deserves to be able to make some kind of a living there. But as you mentioned, my concern is having worked there, having been inside, knowing what the place looks like, and what's happened to it in the last 10 years, is that if she's not successful, what it becomes then. And I have a real concern about that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wants to speak? In opposition, please.
Good morning. My name is Pam Newell, and I live at 1047 Woodbine Road. And I, too, am very concerned that there might be a bar there. It's a nice, quiet residential neighborhood. Even though we have 27 running right by our properties, everyone there is, it's families. It's quiet at night. You know, I mean, maybe during the day there's lots of traffic, but there's lots of time I stand in my backyard and it's silent. And it's very nice out there. That's a really old picture. There's a lot more houses been built in that area. And people come out there looking for a quiet, rural, residential neighborhood. And it's not a business section. A nice, quiet restaurant would be fine. Something that served dinners and closed at, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock. Nobody would oppose that. The old Shady Nook, I was still there when it was open. It was a very quiet, nice place and never gave any problems. The trouble is that when I talked with Cheryl Orman last time after the meeting, she told me that she really had no plans to fix the kitchen anytime soon, planned to serve maybe pizza and sandwiches, and was seeking a B4 liquor license, which, as we all know, is a bar liquor license and not a restaurant liquor license. Once she got in there with sandwiches, pizza, and a B4 license, it would be a bar. We don't even have to worry about what's going to happen if she fails. I mean, it's just what it's going to be. Nobody goes from being some run-down little country bar to being a nice family restaurant. That I can't imagine that happening. And I'm here to urge you all to please help us protect our neighborhood that we really love. Most of the residents out there have lived out there a very long time, and we'd like to see it maintain its good character. And thank you very much for hearing us.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Dale Huffman. I live at 633 Woodbine. I've been there for about 4 years. We don't need a bar there. Down on Millville Tavern, there's a bar there. If anybody wants to go to a bar, it's there. We've already had somebody drunk crash into our fence and not pay for it because they said he had a pre-existing condition. The insurance finagled or whatever, so we'd have to make a claim against our homeowner's insurance just to even prosecute him. And the police didn't even give him a DUI test. He told me straight up when I pulled him out of the car that he had 2 shots and 2 brandies before he came here, and he was trying to run away with his truck wrapped around our telephone pole. Okay, the pole was broke, so we just don't need it. People fly up and down there. It's only 15 miles an hour, and people are going 40, 50. They're throwing beer bottles in my pond. There's enough crime there as it is. My boy's handicapped. He's got cerebral palsy, and we need a quiet, maybe a small restaurant. But the place inside of the Shady Nook, it is trashed. I mean, if you walked in there, you wouldn't believe the condition of everything, because I've been in there. I was in there when it was a restaurant, and that was 8 years ago, and it was trashed then. So I urge you to just keep a bar out of there, because, you know, even a restaurant, it would take thousands and thousands of dollars to, the place needs to be tore down. It is just beyond repair. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Huffman. Anyone else wish to speak in opposition to this zone change? Yes, ma'am.
My name is Cleo Imhoff, and we live at 911 Millville Oxford Road, and we have been there nearly 48 years. We built our home quite a long time ago. My husband's grandparents had the family farm there. I have no objection to a nice family restaurant, really, and if they serve a few drinks. I am concerned that it's going to turn into a bar. If she's just serving sandwiches, and doesn't she need a kitchen to make sandwiches? I don't know, but I'm really concerned that it would turn into a bar with a bunch of drunks down there every night. So I'm hoping that we can get this resolved. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else wish to speak in opposition to this zone change?
Move the public hearing be closed.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Commissioner Harmon?
Yes.
Thank
you. We'll take us under advisement.
Yeah,
I thought we have to make the decision today. It's up to you. What do you think?
I'm prepared to deal with it if you are. If I can wait, if you can wait.
Okay.
What's your preference?
Let's take it under advisement.
So we're going to consider this, and I think we'll probably make a decision next week, you think, mm-hmm. when the full board's here. But let me just share some of my perspective with you. I guess this comment is directed to our planning director. I think that assistant planning director is that I have some real concerns that we don't have some conditions on this. And I understand, you know, we've got all the best intentions of the world here, but once this is rezoned, it's out of our control. We cannot bring it back and put these conditions on. So I would have hoped that we could have worked something out with her that would have placed some conditions that said, you know, you could do this if you do this, 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 and this, and nothing else. If that doesn't work, then it goes away. The zoning's too broad for that area, and I know it is a small piece, but I think it's better suited for a conditional use permit rather than a straight zoning. The zoning is too heavy for the area, so it's too blanketed. So those are my thoughts and my concerns. And I'll be glad to hear it.
I can't, the reason I can't put the steaks and the chicken and those kinds of things in is the boiler.
Yeah.
I have an answer system, but it needs to be replaced, and I've already talked to Stockfire to get that done.
Well,
but the hood is an old hood, and so until I can, my understanding is if there's a new firewall. Right now, it's a gas stove in it and a boiler and a couple French fryers and a steam table. And in order, I can run everything off the steam table, so I can run, you know, anything I would make that would work there. I can do
those aren't.
A lot of the convenience kind of food items. I can do lasagna, and I can do, some other kinds of things. What I can't do is put back exactly what I had before, because I did a lot of steaks, I did a lot of chicken. Ribs and those kinds of things, and without that coating on that wood, I can't serve those kinds of items.
Well, I can appreciate that, and really the menu's not the discussion. The discussion is the use, and you know, it's your property and you can do with what you like. I would think that maybe instead of trying to get it rezoned first, you'd have gotten some estimates first, because I think there's all sorts of problems going to occur when you get in there, but it's just not. I think it's bad zoning. And Mr. President, if you had a comment, then I'd like to maybe reconsider this vote.
I think we're on the same page, and I wholeheartedly agree. So,
you entertain a motion. I'd like to make a motion that we deny the zoning request.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
And Commissioner Furman?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are we going to the public hearing for the revolving loan fund? Are we going to pull that?
Yeah, that's gone.
I think it's pulled, yeah.
Okay. Mr. Davis, the director of our Butler County Regional Airport. Ryan? Okay, good.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
Okay, well, I'm here to I don't have a reputation as being an entertainer. My stand-up's really gone downhill. Hey, how you doing? I'm here to give the board an update on the airport, give you an idea what we've accomplished since the commissioners took over running the airport, and then give you an idea what we're planning on doing or reviewing with you what we're planning on doing for 08 as far as development goes. Since 1999, once again, after the commissioners took over the entire operation of the airport, as far as funding goes, we've received a little over $5 million from the FAA and the state of Ohio in the form of grants. Most of that, 95%. Sponsor had to come up with 5% of it. We've estimated a little over $3 million in private funds being invested at the airport in the form of hangar development. That's a pretty conservative estimate, but keep it at three plus million. And locally, about $2.5 million has been put into the airport. About $500,000 of that $2.5 million were funds received from the cities of Hamilton, Fairfield, Westchester Township, and some from Fairfield Township. And what those funds went into to improve the airport was the construction of a new state-of-the-art general aviation terminal in 2002, the installation of a precision approach navigational aid, the glide slope, the medium intensity approach lighting system, the MAUS, for runway 29, and the associated runway and upgraded taxiway markings and signage. That was primarily local funds. We also demolished and removed two hangars and one corporate hangar from within the airport obstruction area. With the help of state and federal grants, we constructed additional taxiways, access road, associated utilities for continued hangar development. We also installed a little over 4 miles of airport perimeter fencing and security gates. It wasn't required by the FAA at the time, but we wanted to be ahead of the game, and it turned out to be a good decision because it wasn't actually required after, but was highly recommended after 9/11. And what that perimeter fencing does, it not only helps secure the airport from theft and damage and such, but it's gone a long way in creating a safer airport environment. Deer no longer can enter onto the airport property. It's rare that we ever get deer in there. There were literally herds of them at night. And we were lucky nobody was injured because of that. Now they'll get in there occasionally, crawling under the fence near where a creek has eroded beneath it. But I contact the county engineer, and they come out and take care of that very, very quickly. And occasionally a gate will be left open by a contractor. Other than that, we really don't have any problem. The FAA is very, very happy to see that. Obstruction removal for the automated surface observation system was quite complicated, but we were able to obtain signed work agreements from five property owners surrounding the airport. The FAA was happy to see that as well, because it's not often you get adjacent property owners who are willing to cooperate with the airport the way the surrounding property owners at this airport do. We're quite lucky. Reconstruction of ramp areas for operational safety. We were in desperate need of that. We received funding for it. And we've acquired nearly 100 acres for development and to protect the runway approaches. And now we've got about 653 acres for the airport. Allowed for the construction of 4 T hangars and 13 corporate hangars and the associated aprons and parking areas. And we're currently negotiating ground leases for the development of 2 additional hangars, hangar C-10 and C-9. We also relocated 1 executive hangar and 1 T hangar to get them out of the obstacle-free areas. As a result, airport zoning was adopted by 2 cities, obviously Butler County and 4 townships. Once again, the FAA was happy to see that. See, we were really thinking about the future of the airport and doing our best to protect it. The based aircraft declined to 98 based aircraft in 1999. It's increased to 182 as of January of 07. I don't have the new figures in yet for 08.
It's almost up 100.
Please?
Almost up 100.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Diversification of hangar ground lease and GA terminal office lease entities. When the commissioners took over, there were only 5 different entities. One in particular basically owned and ran the airport. And so one of the first things we decided we wanted to do was diversify these ground leases. We're up to 23 now. That's between the ground leases and the entities who are leasing office space in the general aviation terminal. That spreads the the power, if you will. Not one entity has so much control over what happens at that airport. It falls back more on us the way it should be. Based aviation service providers, SASOs is how the FAA looks at it, supplemental aviation service operators, has tripled. We've got turbine maintenance now for the first time in the airport's history. Avionics sales and services back, aviation insurance, aircraft sales, helicopter flight training, and turbine charter flights are now based out at the airport. Airport revenue has increased since 1999. It's about tripled, from roughly $63,500 to we were at $183+ for 07. 08 is expected to be about $196,500. The Ohio Department of Transportation Office of Aviation sponsored an economic impact study. They've shown an economic impact increase from $8.2 million per year to $14.1 million per year. I'm sure we're above that by now. That was done in 05.
How do they come up with that number, or what's involved in that number? What kind of impact, when they say economic impact, what would that be?
The criteria is based on what the FAA requires for the study. I can't tell you everything, the formulas that they used, but it can be obtained through an FAA advisory circular. The Ohio Department of Transportation wanted an economic impact study done on every airport in the state of Ohio so the Office of Aviation could determine where funds should go and where we're at as far as aviation in the state of Ohio. And they went out for bid, and one of the requirements was that whoever did the study, I think there was a Price Waterhouse.
Well, I guess my question was, when you say the airport has an economic impact, how do we have an economic impact? I mean, is it because of flights coming in, gas sales?
All of it is computed. Everything from
car rentals.
Correct. Everything. Not that's not our income. It's based on the total economic impact, which is anything from taxes to revenues generated by vehicles being rented and driven throughout the county, money being spent on food, fuel. Any type of any type of thing.
I think just the accessibility of having the airport there would have to have a great impact on economic development.
And in the formulas, and it's complicated, but in the formulas they take all that into consideration. You know, how much money was being spent on projects and how that effect trickles down. But that information is available. If you want the detailed information, it'd be no problem for me to get it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the development we just spoke of, that was since 1999. Now, in 2008, we want to continue to develop the airport. So what we're planning on doing, I'm requesting funding for three projects. I don't expect to get the grant funding for all three projects, so I prioritize them. And project one is to develop the west terminal area, the packet that you've been given. If you go to page 3, you'll see the terminal area. And what I've done is I've showed the location of potential hangars 408 and the location of the development of potential taxiways and the access road. Page 2 shows the investment for phase 3 of the West Terminal Area development. We would receive about $1 million of private funding in the form of hangar construction if I could complete the entire phase 3 of the West Terminal Area. Increase of airport revenue would be about $22,000 annually within 3 to 5 years, depending on how quickly we got those hangars constructed. The fourth page shows the cost. The cost estimate for the entire project is a little over $626,500. Just what portion would be FAA and what would be local sponsor, I don't know, but lately it's been 95% FAA, 5% local. That may change. The bill that went through, that was signed for funding of the Department of Transportation in Washington, doesn't stipulate how they're going to use the funding through the FAA as of this date. So the Great Lakes region isn't sure how much funding they're going to get, what the prioritization is going to be, or what the percentage of sponsor versus FAA will be. But we're shooting for 95%. Traditionally, the Great Lakes region can't handle that large sum, although we've gotten more in the past. But for these types of projects, I'm hoping to get at least $150,000 to $200,000. That's what we're realistically trying to get. So what I did was I broke the West Terminal Area Development Phase 3 down into subphases, three different subphases. The base bid, $213,000. The alternate bid 1 would be the next taxiway, an additional access road, at $175,000, and then the alternate bid 2, which would complete the taxiway and the access road within the West Terminal Area, would be about $238,000. The other projects, Project 2 and 3 for 08, would be, if the funding were available, the purchase of land and structure, which is land located just west of the property and structure that we purchased 2 years ago, the Wright property. I don't have the address on it. It wasn't written in any of my paperwork. But there's land and a structure there. It's within our obstacle-free area. I could get funding for it, but it's not priority one. But it is somewhat of a priority. And then Project 3 would be the land that's adjacent to Airport Road East. We've attempted to acquire that property in the past, but when we were negotiating, the appraisal and review appraisal came out at $35,000 an acre. The owner approached us, said he wanted $60,000. We had it appraised and review appraised by the FAA, who stated if we had boring done and the test came out positive and there was comparable fill in there, they could go as high as $45,000. But then the property owner said he wanted $90,000. Now he's up to $100,000. He sent me a letter saying he'd be willing to sell us just under 1 acre out of the approximately 4 acres that we're looking at for $130,000. So he keeps reaching. And I don't think there's anything wrong with our negotiations. Like I said, we've purchased 100 acres over the past 7 years, and we've always been able to come to an agreement with the landowners. This is the only one that we're just not able to work out yet, anyway. Those are the three projects we're looking for in 08. And we just wanted to state the recent improvements and increased economic impact of the airport for the region is a direct result of the vision, financial support, and cooperation of the Butler County Commissioners and the staff, the owners, cities of Hamilton and Fairfield, government officials, and their economic development, permit, zoning, engineering, police, fire, and in the case of Hamilton, utilities departments, Westchester, Fairfield, St. Clair, and Liberty Township's government officials, the Ohio Department of Transportation's Office of Aviation, the Federal Aviation Administration, and the private entities who chose the Butler County Regional Airport as their location for development and other aviation-related activities. Do you gentlemen have any questions?
I don't have any questions right this minute, Ron, but we do apparently have a good reputation in Columbus. The group that we send from here, with your lead, of course, has done a tremendous job on acquiring the funding for this, state and federal. What you haven't said yet is the fact that the airport was voted the Airport of the Year in 2007, is my understanding, for the first, that was the first such recognition. Mm-hmm. And we're fortunate enough today to have John Fabello here. He's the architect with Lorenzen Williams, who actually designed the new terminal for the airport, and we're very proud of that. Nice job. And are we hoping to add on to the back of that as well?
Yeah, I've been working on that for the past couple of years, and we get close each year, but I haven't been able to get them to sign on the dotted line yet. But yeah, that's one of our main goals.
Okay.
Using private funding. Yeah, a hangar, as it was designed originally.
You know, the sheriff, does he keep his helicopter out there?
Yes, yes. Okay. They keep the helicopter out at the airport.
This is one of the reasons why we're pushing so hard for Bypass Ford, is to turn the airport into more of an economic development tool. And of course, you know, we've got the approval for the connection to the bypass to the airport.
So extension of Bob Meyer Road?
Yes.
Yeah, that would be a tremendous.
That will be.
Yeah.
That'd be a huge difference, I think, and make a real impact. So
yes, it would.
We got to keep everybody focused and pushing on that so we can get that done. That'll bring a lot of commerce, a lot of jobs, I think. That'd mm-hmm. be a good deal.
Mm-hmm. So. Increase that economic impact.
Yeah,
you got it.
You guys have done a great job. We appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
That's definitely a jewel for Butler County, and we appreciate all your effort on it, Ron.
Yeah, well, I appreciate all the support.
Mr. Furman, it makes a big difference when you hire someone to run a department that speaks the language, is an expert, and is well-respected. And that's what has happened here with Ron, because when he goes up to the FAA, I've gone with him on those meetings, and they start talking Greek with that lingo and the acronyms, and yeah. And they're all just getting all excited doing all that stuff. Ron is a pilot himself. He knows the stuff. He teaches, and it's just made a huge. Oh, you can see almost everything on that picture on the front page is new since '99, so it's been really well.
I yeah. think Mike Samovisky's had a great hand in that as well. The former
yeah.
city manager.
Yes, he
of
oh yeah. Oh, there are a lot of people who. And, a lot of people. Oh yeah.
And others. So yeah.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you. Appreciate the support. We've come a long way, and we got a long way to go.
Sounds good. Thanks, Ron.
Mr. Chairman, I've got this correspondence prepared to go to the County Commissioners Association.
Good.
To introduce it.
Okay.
This is to the tax commissioner, Mr. Levin. Basically, it says that we're concerned about the way they're going to do the reappraisal, and that we're asking them to throw out years 205 and 206 and go with year 207 only, because I think that reflects a true value of the real estate market. And I believe it's unfair that our property owners would be burdened at this point in time with what they're talking about, proposing a 9% increase. That just can't be possible, and it can't be accurate. So we need to keep pressing the state to change the way they evaluate our real estate, especially for this, maybe just this one time, because it's such an unusual time as far as the economy goes for real estate in Butler County. This letter has been signed by all three commissioners, by our county prosecutor, by the county treasurer, by the county auditor, and the county recorder. So with that, I'd like to offer this into the record to be forwarded on.
Second. Also, I'd like to add to that, if I can.
Sure.
I'd like to have, if possible, set up a meeting with the tax commissioner and explain to him personally what
good idea.
What our wishes are, and see if we can't keep the pressure on to.
So we just all make a trip to Columbus.
Yeah, exactly.
Derek, we work on setting that up. Great idea. Thank you.
Thanks. Pardon me? Yes, let's do communications, please.
First would be to approve minutes from the January 7th meeting, approve travel and training requests. We have a number of different, a lot of national conventions folks are going to and training sessions, some required by their certificates. Approve transfers and appropriations. Establish the monthly transfer to Metro Parks for 2008. Approve a pay adjustment for CSCA investigator and accept retirement and resignation for a record center specialist. I'd like to pull the next one, reclassification regarding intermittent recorder, record specialist. Approve change of payroll funds under development. Approve and execute agreement to modify rural zone agreement with Lock Screen Company Incorporated, and execute a sub-recipient agreement for City of Oxford for their block grants. Under Job and Family Services, accept payroll for December 22nd through January 4th. Approve termination of temporary water service agreement of property in Union, Westchester Township. Approve agreement with SK Construction for installation of concrete pad at Butler County Jail. Under miscellaneous, approve contract with Harris and Leach for maintenance service at the Butler County Airport. That's for $12,700 annually. Receive and refer bids for fiber optic backbone extension up in Middletown. Approve a change order for Board of Election Phase 2. Approve and execute agreement with Animal Friends Humane Societies for their contract for 08, which is at $175,000. Approve outside legal counsel for two workers' comp cases, and go into executive session as soon as possible after this meeting to discuss possible personnel actions.
I would like to ask that we poll us, approve change order for the BOE for phase two until we have some discussion on that.
Okay.
Other than that, I'll move for approval.
Second.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
And Commissioner Herman?
Yes. Anyone else in the audience have anything to bring before the commission today?
Yes, matter of fact, we'd like to.
We're going to about
the building?
Yeah, we're going to talk to the architects about our our difficulties that we're having with our new building, getting it on schedule, keeping it on schedule.
Okay.
And so, Mr. Chairman, if you want to handle that, that'd be fine.
John, you want to give some discuss with us?
Yes. Do you want us to give you an update? Do you
have we want to just a. If you would give us an update, John, and tell us, as you well know, construction on the site's not going well. Mm-hmm. We're concerned about it, and we're to the point now to where I want to know, and I think the board wants to know how we're going to remedy the problem and how we're going to get back on schedule, because this is something that cannot miss its deadline.
Okay. Commissioner, what I can do is give you a real quick rundown of the process of the project and some of the challenges that we kind of anticipated on the project. I think when we started the project, there was a lot of concern about a very aggressive schedule, and the director of Board of Elections address that there were certain key dates that had to be met, and we actually had three sets of dates, with trying to get it ahead of the election or trying to get it behind the election. And we ended up with the latest that this project could open would be June 20th. And that's the current schedule that was on the table, that furniture would have to move into this building June 20th. When we got those dates, we said that's very aggressive for a project of this scale and for a lot of the unknowns that were at the time. We recommended that the only way we saw to make that happen would be to go to three phases. And there was a lot of concerns about three phases for valid reasons. There was a lot of pushback on, does three phases create overlap, which then creates cost? Does three phases, you know, have other challenges? It'll meet the schedule, but it's going to bring other challenges to us. I know architecturally we don't like it because it means we're doing things three times. I know the contractors don't like it because it means dividing one contract into three pieces. And very early on, the team has all been, you know, in the departments, the field reps have been great at trying to work to answer the questions and to keep it moving. But one of the challenges and one of the things that we did said is we're going to go to three phases, which means we were going to do a site, or it's three construction phases and then furniture. It was going to be a site package, then a shell package, and then a tenant fit-out package. A lot of discussion and a lot of pushback from the commissioners, well done, as to making sure that we don't overlap those packages in a way that we're spending county money unwisely. So there was a lot of planning of those packages to make sure that they were done right for the county, for the client, for the schedule. But in that process, one of the things that we did do with the director and with our representative from the commissioner was we need a plan B. Because from day one, and I'm only going this back in history a little bit, because I think just to be fair to all of us, that we were very concerned. This is a very aggressive project. Two things go wrong, that date is at jeopardy. So I think from day one, Betty has been great, the director of Board of Elections, and Tim, at coming up with plan B strategy that we hope we never have to employ. But there is that. I don't want the commissioners to think that we went into this with a very aggressive schedule, not planning. We better have some other backups for us. So that was one thing that we started early on. Then there were some challenges with the different packages that we dealt with. Phase one was wonderful. He ran into some challenges, but he dealt with them. And his challenge was, I mean, our original dates were award August 17th, complete phase one by December 7th. He did the bulk of his work within that schedule. There were some leaks that he found on site that we couldn't finish till he figured out where the leak was. So he, again, I can't say anything bad about him. He went on, redug lines at his cost. We never saw a change order from the phase one contractor saying, you know, here's more dollars because I had to do more work. He redug all his lines, found the leak. That did have some impact to the phase two contractor. Not his fault that, you know, the site was having more work and more people on than he wanted early on. Phase two contractor was an August 31 with a January, end of January completion. We knew that those two were critical packages. We did, you know, everything we could. Phase two hit some challenges from a siting or from a permitting that are nobody's fault. They're as much my fault as they are the city of Hamilton's fault. It's just they don't go through too many three-phase projects. And when they saw three-phase projects, as much as we tried to be prepared for their questions, there were a lot of things they wanted that you don't normally do. You know, they wanted, and in fairness to them, we're giving them, here's the foundation, here's the site work, approve it, but I'm not going to show you the building just yet other than the sketch, because they haven't seen all the documents. And the reason we went the three phases is we needed 6, 7, 9 months to build all the documents, to meet with the departments to find out their needs. So we were giving the city a site without them really knowing what the inside of the building was going to look like. And it was slow. I have to admit, there was a slow process in getting them up to speed. Early on, they told us, the very first couple of meetings we had, they said, we don't do that. You need to give me, I need to see the entire building before I can approve the first one. And as we worked together and they realized the process and the goals that we were trying to achieve, they got with it. But there were some site permitting delays that affected the phase two contractor. John, his goal was
we do that all the time in the county.
I know.
It's done all over the country.
We did that in this building.
So how much time did they cost us?
I don't know that it would be. I would have to go back to my numbers and give you that answer to be exact with it, but there was probably a two-week process that between some of it our firm, I'm not trying to blame it all on them. I'm saying that there's work that we had to do to satisfy their needs that take us time too. And you normally don't do it if you just do all the documents. You know, we're still doing some of that, Commissioner Dixon. They're wanting all the revisions that happened during permitting to be updated on the set of drawings. Well, when you do three phases, there's three sets moving on out there. And they're not doing anything wrong, but they're adding some steps that are safety checks for themselves that you normally don't plan on.
At this point, they're not holding us up.
Phase three is still in the phasing permit. They're not holding it up, but we don't have it yet. We're working with them on phase three. And we're doing, from our office, we're doing a lot of extra work to keep them the answers that they need. Phase three is not out yet, but we haven't awarded phase three. Phase two was done. We've calculated potentially 2 weeks that phase two lost because of not having a permit. And that's in a linear, that's not analyzed. If we start analyzing it, and we haven't done that, and we haven't felt that need. If you start analyzing, were their foundations far along enough that the phasing was really slowing them down, or were they making work in other areas? There's some of that could happen. We haven't gotten that critical. We've been trying to team with them. We met with them in December. Their contract started. The shell was awarded, well, it was supposed to be awarded around August, the end of August. And their goal is to be done January 25th. We've been meeting with them pretty diligently. In December, before the holidays, we met with them. Your representative, Tim, was there. We were very disappointed because they had missed some dates. They were saying the weather was causing some delays. At the meeting, they had some change orders that we challenged and said, you know, what kind of weather were you planning on?
You're talking about a general contractor.
Yes, the general contractor.
When I went out there a number of days and they didn't have anybody on the site.
Yes.
That guy?
Yes.
And in the time when I went out there this week and they had six men on a 55,000 square foot site, guy?
Yes. And we've had concerns with him from very early on. He was the low bidder. And, you know, we called all his references. There was nothing in his references. The other jobs, equivalent size, you know, all panned out and we got good references. When we had our first couple of meetings, we had some concerns. And 2 months ago, we asked him, because I should have introduced Eddie. Eddie Howard is our field guy, so he's the one that's on the field, and he did the air terminal project. Early on, he came to me and said, John, I have a little bit of concern. These guys, between the two of them, there's some lack of coordination that I wish was going on, and I don't see it. You know, I know everything says they can do it, but I'm worried. And 2 months ago, we started saying, okay, Eddie. And I went to Tim and said, Tim, do I have your permission to step over my bounds? My job as the CA, Construction Administration, is to make sure that I'm pushing them and that they're meeting the drawings that we produce, that at the end I can turn over a building, which is what you paid for and what we drew. Not to coordinate their job, not to tell them what the schedule is, not to do their work. But we started seeing some real concerns on the site a month and a half ago. And Eddie came to me and said, I need more time on that site. I know that we've got budgeted in the contract so many hours on the site a week. That's not going to get this job done. I went to Tim and said, Tim, am I okay if I start letting Eddie get more involved in this? And I'm not trying to charge any more for this right now. I'm just trying to raise the flag. I hope it doesn't get out of hand. If it does, can we talk about it again? Tim said, we got to keep this project moving. It's critical. We have a plan B, but we don't want to employ it. And I said, okay. Eddie's been meeting with his subs on the site. One of the things that we were very happy about was that his sub for concrete, we have a lot of confidence in. But his sub doesn't, if his sub shows up on the site, because Tim and I were talking about this last week, if his concrete sub shows up on the site and he sees what you saw, three guys that aren't quite there, he just walks away, he goes home. So no matter how good our subs may be, we got to get the general to get coordinated on site. What Eddie did, probably right around the holidays, met with the concrete sub and them, basically doing their coordination, trying to get the concrete sub to feel confident, and we gave them an ultimatum. They gave us a series of dates that they were going to meet. They missed them all. Their reason for missing them was weather. And fair. You know, if we look at December, unfortunately, we had a very dry summer. We're getting a lot more of the wetness in the winter. We knew we had to get it somewhere. The challenge we threw back at him is, you know, there was a change order that he asked, which was for demucking. And we challenged him and told him, you know, you can write the change order. We're going to dispute the change order to the end. Do not slow the progress down because of that change order. He agreed, and with that, we've been pleased. He said, we're going to keep working. We're not going to dispute the change order. We believe there's a need for this. Well, we turned back and we said, give us a letter. Write to us. What were you planning to do? Because in winter, it's usually wet. It's usually not 70 degree and dry. How were you planning to do this? And if you write your letter explaining what you had in the base contract and you can prove to us that you're having to do things above and normal, we'll talk about this. But till you do that, we can't. I don't know that we ever got that, but we expressed that. Then we had a meeting with his sub and said, you know, we got to get this moving. His concrete sub was there. I don't know, Eddie, if you felt any concerns from that meeting with the sub?
Not with the sub. We did set down some No, go ahead. I want to know what we have to do to fix the problem.
As John had spoke, from the very first coordination or progress meeting we had, I had concerns with this contractor because I didn't have that feel that they even meshed together within their own unit. And Tim and John and I spoke, and everybody was aware of what our concerns with. The ray of hope with me was the concrete contractor because of the old relationship you have with them. You know, as you come through this business, you build those relationships and you rely on trying to work with those folks that know you well and know what you can do. So I was depending on that concrete contractor to drag this project along so that we could get the mix in where we needed it. And it, like John alluded to, that we did meet with them on, I think it was December 21st, and we set down some target dates, and that was to get your first slab on grade pour for half of the building on approximately January 4th. We still felt confident that we could start looking at overlapping the phase two, phase three schedule and still stay on track with those. When we come to the January 4th meeting, then all we're hearing is a 1 week look ahead, and that's not cutting it. You know, we need a warm, fuzzy feeling of where this project's going, how it's going to go, what are the pieces going together, and we're not getting that. We did sit down with him and his subcontractors and drew out of them, you know, we're going to set some targets here and we're going to stick to these targets henceforth because I need to start talking to phase three, which I have, even though they're not contractually bound to you. I have been speaking to those folks because of relationships over the years. And we've set down dates that I documented to Tim so that he was aware of what I was looking at, that we need to hit these dates so that we can mesh phase three in and not lose any more time. Right now, as we went on to the site today, it looks like we're hitting those last targets that we issued in an architectural field report to Tim. So if
those
we do,
were issued January 4th. Is that?
I have to look at
first week of this year.
I would have to look at the date. I can give you that date.
What
if
Eddie
you need
is
that
talking
date.
About is they missed December 21. We were probably 2 weeks behind schedule. We were still trying to give them something for the weather. We weren't happy. The 21 meeting, we weren't agreeing with them. We told them, show us something. We came back. They missed all the dates that were given to us on the 21st. Eddie had a meeting with them again that Monday, or maybe it was Friday.
It was Friday,
with them, and then stayed and met with their subs and helped them coordinate, created a new list of dates that we told them, if you do not miss those dates, there will be ramifications. We're going to miss our total target. So these are critical. You called us. I think there was a call from the county that came in the following week, and they were not showing real great signs. And we had been, for the last 2 weeks, we've been calling. Steve Foley calls me at 8 o'clock on the clock now, every night, to let me know his update because he's nervous. He was in Alabama when he got the letter. I don't know that he's back yet.
No.
So he hasn't seen the letter in person, but Greg got the letter and had been getting the tone that we had and called him in Alabama and said, you need to call John, you need to call Eddie because there's a lot of concern. And when he called me, I expressed the same thing that Eddie had done a week before. These last set of dates, if we miss them, there will be issues. And he already, in the conversation with me, said, well, I'm already 2 days behind because it rained and I can't get it done. And I said, just realize it. We sent the letter out. When the commissioners approached me and said, we need this terminate, we need to send the letter, my comment was, you know, I agree 100%. We've been frustrated for the last 2 weeks, but let's try to give them a chance to meet these last dates. And I sent the letter saying, reminded them of the dates and said, here are the dates that you promised us come January. And I said, if you do not meet these letters, there will be termination because we've got to get back on track.
What are the dates and what's the promise?
The promise is that they would have gravel by this Friday, and there's two sections of pour by this Friday. And I don't know if you have the actual dates. I didn't bring a copy of the letter, Derek, but there was a series of dates, and it goes through all the gravel because they've been having problems with demucking, which is basically getting rid of the slop, but they keep waiting for the perfect weather, which they're not going to get in the winter. So we finally 2 weeks ago said, you just need to do it. You're the contractor. You figure out the method. You've got to do it. So they've gone this week, and even early this week, they weren't there. I think a combination of the meetings, and I have to say the letter, the threat in writing rather than just meetings, probably the two together got them, because this week has been really aggressive bad weather. We probably had the worst weather this week than we had even last week in terms of the storms we had. Steve has called me pretty regularly this week letting me know that they are on target, that they have demucked the site, that
so
they have
pour tomorrow?
They're yes. going to pour Friday.
That's tomorrow.
Yes.
That's our understanding. We just came from the site.
And if they don't meet those dates, they know that there will be termination. And if we're given permission to do that.
How many men do they have on the site?
I counted 15.
Ian and John, look, I understand construction as well as probably the next guy.
Oh, I know.
You know? And when you got a 55,000 square foot slab laying out there and six people on site don't get it, my question to you is why did you let that continue? Why didn't we send this letter 3-4 weeks ago?
We've been working with them.
They didn't think we were serious about it, or what? I mean,
I honestly don't know, Eddie. If you have a better answer than me, I don't know if they don't have the coordination capacity. If they don't have,
they knew what our schedule was when they took the bid.
We've been giving them all the answers that they.
Everybody knew that it was an aggressive schedule, but based on common sense, we thought. With a little, we should make this, okay? We're not even making a good effort to make it. Now, I understand if we get bad weather and, nobody can control that. But when you've got almost a 70-degree day in January, and I got six men on a 55,000-square-foot slab, and he says he's demucking it, and he's running a D3 across there pushing the top off trying to dry it up, don't get it.
And so
why do we let him? Why don't we just say, look, give us your plan or get out of the way?
We did at the end of the year. In December 21, we told him, give us your plan, give us the dates. We cannot lose any more time. He told us how he had lost time for this and for that. He's always got a good strategy. One of his concerns was he was very disappointed that when you came to the site, he wasn't there to explain to you why he wasn't. He only had
probably
six guys.
Probably a good thing he wasn't there.
Yes. Yeah, but that was his concern. He's always
there's no explanation for that, John.
There's a good reason in his mind why he's done that. Yeah. We gave him a threat in December and said we need to make these dates. They missed them. We strategized and said, what are our choices here? And we talked to Tim about it, and we said if losing them at this point is going to slow the project, it probably will assure us no deadline. So we said let's give them another set of dates.
Let me give you my perspective. Mm-hmm. If we're going to miss the deadline, they're going to be gone. Now, that needs to be conveyed. And, if he wants to call me, I'll tell him personally.
They know that right now. They know very sure.
I want to see some tower lights on that job. I want to see guys there early and staying late in good weather. And I want to see the sufficient amount of manpower to build that building. It's a several million dollar building. It warrants that kind of attention, and we're not getting it. And the demucking, as far as I'm concerned, is because they're off schedule.
I agree. I mean, if you look, and we said that, when you look at the photos, they had opportunities. They just, unfortunately, they weren't getting those opportunities.
He oughtn't be looking here for any change orders on anything like that. In fact, I think we ought to be looking at him for what kind of monies we're going to be running into if he gets us off, if we can't make this target date. So he needs to understand that we're dead serious. And it's not got anything to do with you and your company.
I understand.
And I understand you're kind of in the middle. But, he took the contract, and he's not delivering, as I see it.
And what we talked about when earlier in the week, or late last week, was the concern about let's get a letter, let's write it. We've written the letter. Okay. He's got the letter. It's raised his attention even further. He knows, and it is serious. It was there before the letter, that if he doesn't meet this last set of dates that he gave us 2 weeks, he is off the job.
It's past serious. It's now critical.
Yeah.
Okay? And if we're going to miss that target, he's not going to build the building. Okay? We'll pull somebody else in there that's got the manpower to get it done. They'll bring some tower lights on that job, and they'll do, like, winter work. And we're in the winter. He took the job in the winter.
And we met with them.
Everybody knows it gets dark at 5 o'clock in December. So
let's be clear about who he is and the name of the company. That has to be referred to.
It doesn't make any difference. I don't want to go there, Derek. We know who the contract's with, and you know, John, you've expressed our message and my message, and I'm sure Commissioner Furman's got something to say about it. But look, it's, you know, this is a very, very critical. This is not building a 4-H barn that we can move horses in August or November.
Right.
This is the election process, okay? And we've got a lot. It's a huge year for us. Butler County's never not performed 1,000% proper and correct on an election, and this is not going to be the first year it happens.
Right.
So we're going to be making the move here in the next several days, and this gentleman had better grasp the situation.
What one question in terms of preparing ourselves, because I always like to have a plan B. We've made it real clear that he has to meet these dates. He's given us the dates. We've documented them with the county what they are. What's our liberty if he does not meet those dates at this point? Just so that I know the answer, but I want to know, you know, what actions can I take?
He's out here. If he misses the date, then that means we have no chance of making our completion
that's
deadline.
Correct.
As far as I'm concerned, he's terminated.
Okay.
I'm with you.
There's and two votes.
Do we have authority to talk to the Phase 3 contractor to prepare ourselves? Because he bid the Phase
absolutely
2 work. Because we've talked about that, but we don't.
Our message to you is get the building built in the time frame that we've got on the boards. Now, however you got to do that,
okay.
I don't really care. You know, if you have to fire 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't care. I want to be fair with them. I want to get it done. And we're not going to jeopardize the election on this, on somebody that doesn't share our concerns and doesn't have the responsibility that we have. I mean, if something happens with this election and it doesn't come down right because we can't actually handle the process, you're looking at the guys right here this guy's going to call you from North Carolina, and he's going to say, hey, John, man, you guys really did a bad job, but, man, I wish I could have helped you, but I was fishing. I'm not interested in what he was doing, you know. I've been down that road before. It's not my first rodeo. And I understand what manpower takes to build that building, and we want it done.
Yeah. And we understand your frustration. You know, for us to finish the documents in the 6 months was a major undertaking. And you know, the department,
we
were meeting with them weekly.
That's why we picked you, and that's why we had all the confidence in the world in your firm to get it done, and you've got your part done. We went out to bid. We're paying, you know, we didn't tell them how much we were going to pay them. They told us what they'd take to do it. We agreed to it. We got a contract. Get it done, or get out of the way.
Well, we will start the discussions with Phase 3, get ourselves prepared.
Yeah.
Today looks like they're going to meet the schedule. Let's hope that's true.
I hope so.
We know, and we're not kidding ourselves. Eddie and I know that even if we meet this hurdle, we can't afford any hurdles, and there's going to be another one. So we got to be prepared.
But that's what makes us different from everybody else. We'll get it done.
Yeah.
You know, we will get it done. So just whatever it takes,
okay.
Let's get it done. Communicate with us. You don't have to call me directly.
Okay.
Call Mr. Furman.
Come here if you need.
Derek. We're available. I'm on the site almost all the time. We have a representative out there every day photographing the progress of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew where this was headed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we need you to help us
get
it done. And again, it's nothing, John. This is not directed at you in any way, shape, or form.
That.
You know,
you're our hammer.
Yeah, you're just the guy that's got to go pull the trigger.
Yep.
But hey, when you get out there, the good news is, blame it on me.
Well, we will. We'll keep you in tune. This
yeah.
Friday is the big date. They have to pour the Board of Elections side. The east side has to be poured by Friday, or they miss their target date. So.
Yeah. Looks like we got some decent weather coming next week too.
We've had incredible weather the last two days. Yeah.
Right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks. At this time, we'll go into recess to executive session.